Started at the Way in North West London in conjunction with Vazrabon Lune Stam, Sunday 22nd of Teves, 26th December, Rabbi Sholem Siegel. It looks like a mezuzah, it feels like a mezuzah, but is it a mezuzah?
Thank you very much, Bereshit, the Dayan. First of all, let me just begin by giving a particular yashkeh to Mr. Simmons, who obviously Rabbonim, people are aware, obviously the Rabbonim are working very hard to improve the whole situation, but I know through the interaction we've had over the last few days, where he really pushes at it to make sure things get done and things run smoothly. That's just one introduction. The other disclaimer I just want to put in before we begin is that we're not speaking about any particular seller, any particular shop, not in London, not in Eretz Yisrael, not in America. We're talking about, as we'll see, Be'ezus Hashem, an issue which is very much pertinent across the globe, really across the globe, and therefore really no shop, no seller, no sefer, no magia we're not referring to a particular individual. I'm not a sefer, I'm not a magia. I've had the success of giving shiurim on the subject of Stam over the last few years. I've got a couple of brothers who are seferim, that's how I got interested in the subject, but I don't actually write myself. So, Be'ezus Hashem, what I'm going to present, I've been asked to give over today, is more to give people an appreciation of what goes into writing a mezuzah, through that to get an idea of what a mezuzah, what it's going to cost in practically speaking today, and what people can do on an individual level, what we can do when I'm going into buy a mezuzah, what should I be looking for, what questions can I ask to try, as far as possible, to ensure that I'm getting the product that I actually want to get. So the title, it looks like a mezuzah, it feels like a mezuzah, but is it a mezuzah? That was the title that was actually given to me. It wasn't my actual choice of title there. But what you'll see on the screen over here, that's gone too far. No, that is it. Right. What you see on the screen over here is something which doesn't feel like a mezuzah, doesn't look like a mezuzah, and it's not a mezuzah. It's what I'm holding in my hands here. You're welcome to look at it afterwards. It's this is something that somebody bought on Amazon, right, online. They were actually just buying. Really, they just wanted the mezuzah case. This came, as a freebie, came with it. It's really, as far as I can see, just a piece of paper. They've photocopied mezuzah on it, a bad attempt at that. You should be able to see down the left, the words are chopped off. So clearly it doesn't feel like a mezuzah, doesn't look like a mezuzah, and is not a mezuzah. But what you'll see on the next image, however, is a mezuzah which was up on somebody's doorpost for I don't know how long, somebody in Australia. I don't know who the person was, religious, not religious, I have no idea. All I know is the next mezuzah was bought in Eretz Yisrael, very possibly close, wrapped up already, so the person wouldn't have seen what was in there. And for sure, it looks like a mezuzah, feels like a mezuzah, but when it was actually opened recently, that was what it was. You should, if you actually look there, the question is it would really be laughable if it wasn't so sad. First of all, the sofa there, if it's a sofa who wrote it, normally speaking, when you write a mezuzah, you've got the sirtut, right, which is like the line scored into it. And between one sirtut and the next, the writing, the classic letters, chaf, beis, mem, all these letters, they fill up half the space. Well, this sofer decided to go from one sirtut to the next and use the whole space. So when it came to end the letters, like an end of chaf, it now, instead of reading things like beveisech, or for example on line 5 there, it reads beveiso. Right, these are just basic things. But what sort of strikes you as being very strange there is, when you come to Uvashach Becha, suddenly the sefer decided to leave a break. Now, why did he do that? The answer is the sefer was so ignorant that he didn't realize, if you go back, I'll show you what a mezuzah is supposed to look like. That is, this is from a sefer, you'd be very lucky if you were ever to get a mezuzah from him. This is really one of the most beautiful mezuzahs I've ever seen. If you look on line 6, right, you've got a gap, right? And then on line 7, you've got an indentation there, because that's where one parasha finishes and the next one begins. this sofa decided that he ran out of space, so he'll leave the gap anyway in the middle of parasha number one. You then go on, and if you go to, I think it's about 3-4 lines from the end, I mean, you can pick out anything here, but you come to the Hishtach Avisem, last word on the line, and again, he didn't have room for the mem, so he missed it out. But the biggest joke is obviously when you come to the end, just read it. The Otzar Es HaShomayim, Velo Yem Otzar. He realized he was running out of space, running out of time. So he just skipped a whole load and wrote Kimei, didn't have room for HaShomayim, and just finished off Ala Oret. This is called the abridged version of a mezuzah. So this is a mezuzah which definitely from the outside could well have, it looks like cloth, looks like a mezuzah, feels like a mezuzah, but when it was opened up, sadly, it was anything but a mezuzah. Obviously, that's a very, very extreme example. But to a large extent, the market is really full of, not quite to the same extent, but mezuzahs which may well look like a mezuzah, feel like a mezuzah, but don't necessarily qualify as a mezuzah, or definitely not as a mezuzah which is mehudar, the owner we're speaking to today. It's not quite what you would be looking for. The Satmar Rebbe recently, apparently in America, he came out with a very, very strong statement, and he said that the mezuzahs which are coming over from Eretz Yisrael, as I said, it's not just here in America, it's a much, much, much bigger market. And he said the mezuzahs which are coming over are no longer, he's talking about the ones which come over, like Dain Gedi said, we're talking about in the thousands, you've got a sofa who just turns up, you don't know who the sofa is, where it's come from. He said they don't have a cheskas kashrus. They have a cheskas kosher b'di'evet, or even worse, could be apostles. He told everyone again they should be checking. Again, if you know where you're buying from, you're getting from somebody who's trustworthy, obviously that's different. Rabbi Sorrel Reisman, also in a shir, I think just in last week or a couple of weeks ago, there's a recording which has gone viral. At the beginning of a shir, he's obviously just become aware of it in Flatbush, the situation there. And you could just hear him saying he doesn't understand, he doesn't know what they're going to do, he's very frustrated about it. And he said that he got up in shul, and he said to them, I know what's going to happen, I'm going to speak, I'm going to tell you some of the issues. The majority of you are just going to continue on davening, and that will be it. But those who really care about it will bring me your mezuzahs in your own time, and I'll take a look at them. And he said, kachaba, most people just continued on davening, thought it was obviously exaggerated. But those who really cared, they brought him their mezuzahs. He says, I think possibly with the exception of one person, he says every single person who brought him their mezuzahs had at least one which was possible. So when I said this in Shea recently, somebody said, okay, but that means the rest of them were kosher at least, right? They may have been kosher. He's not saying they were mehudar. He's saying possible, every single person had at least one, could it be more, which were possible. He says he went to a seller who's seen as being a trustworthy, an elecha seller, and he said to him, tell me something. Do you sell mezuzahs which don't have what's called bedechaya? Bedechaya means on the letters base, dalut, kuf, ches, yud, and hey, it has an extra tuck. So he said, yeah, we sell it. He said, why? So the seller said, because it's kosher. So he said, fine, kosher, but it's not, I mean, lechatzchila, to sell it like that, why don't you add them in? He said, people don't want to pay. People don't want to pay the money, so we've got to sell it like that. He says he doesn't understand, he doesn't know what they're going to do about it. But this is the situation the world over. Let me just give you one last sort of thing to think about, and that's the following. Like we said, you get a soicha who comes over with a suitcase, 1,000 mezuzahs at a time. They assure you everything is written by a soicha who's got a tu'udah, he's certified, yirei shamayim, they're all mehuda, avada de mehuda. We get them here in England, you get them in America, you'll get them in Canada, Eretz Yisrael, it's all mehuda. So, over here, I don't know if you're going to be able to see it from there, but I'll tell you what's on there. And this is from 2014, somebody called Reb Eli Gutnick. He's the founder of the International Stam Forum. And he was giving a talk at a Chabad convention. And he put this question to them, who's writing our stuff? Now, today it's a little bit more difficult to get accurate statistics, but these are the statistics from 2014, and I've been told it's highly unlikely that it's particularly changed. And what you'll find is 20% of Sofrim are fit into the category as being what you call maybe Haredi, and with a certificate. That means once upon a time they took a test. It doesn't mean that it's up to date, it doesn't guarantee they know anything anymore, but they once upon a time they took a test. Their writing may not be up to par, I mean, obviously it must be kosher, but it may not be the sort of writing you'd want, but they fit into that category, 20%. Then you've got 15%, 1/5, who may be Haredi, Erecha people, but they haven't taken any sort of test, you don't know what they know. We'll see about Be'ezrat Hashem soon, that's rather, you don't really want to be going down that route. Then you've got 50%, 5-0, who are anything in between. Basically, they may well be Jewish, maybe yes, maybe not, but the Maisa, you wouldn't know what's going on over there. And then the final 15%, 1/5, could be anything from Arabs to women, anything. A few years ago, they found the Mishmeres HaSdam found a factory in China. Everything seems to go on in China, but they found a factory there producing mezuzahs, tefillin. The good news is, at least for us, is it's highly, highly unlikely it's ever made it into any of the shops or anything like that. It's more likely to have been sold online, right? But and in fact, one of the silver lining in COVID is they reckon that bottom 15% bracket has actually been pushed out of being pushed out of business. So we're talking about, if you're going to be going to buy a mezuzah, which you want to know hopefully is kosher mehuda, you're going to be looking for that top bracket, 20%. Now, how many sofrim do we have in Eretz Yisrael? They say, I think it says on there, 98%. 98% of stam comes from Eretz Yisrael. So let's just talk about Eretz Yisrael. How many sofrim do we have? So I was told, we're talking about a year or two back, something like 10,000. It could be more, but even if it is more, some of them, as we said, are not going to make it into the Haimashem market because their writing is not quite, is not what you're looking for, etc. So let's work, just for the time being, with 10,000. It's not going to make much difference. 20% gives you 2,000 sofrim who are going to fit this bill, being Haredi, trustworthy, and have had some sort of certification. Now, again, let's talk about America because it's a much bigger market than here. In America, in the main sort of towns like Williamsburg, Lakewood, etc., etc., again, these are figures I got a year or two back. We're talking about, in terms of bar mitzvah boys, how many pairs of tefillin do they need a year? We're talking about over 15,000 pairs of tefillin. Over 1/5, right? 15,000. Lakewood alone is, at the time, is over 1,200. You know, Kanaina Hor, it's constantly growing. In terms of Sifrei Torah, at the time, Lakewood was 150 to 250 a year. That's just Lakewood. Now it's probably much higher because everyone seems to be writing Sifrei Torah at the moment. Mezuzahs in Lakewood, we were talking about at the time, anything, probably now we're talking anything up to 1,000 a week. Okay, at the moment there's a major shortage of good schorah for good mezuzahs. There are people who are stuck in America, that's what I'm told, they can't move at the moment. They can't move house because they don't have the mezuzahs. So realistically, I'm told this by reliable sources in America, that you need a good 1,000 sofrim just to cover the market in America in the main cities there, just for the tefillin and the Sifrei Torah, not even the mezuzahs. That's already 1,000 sofrim. Then you add in Canada, Europe, Eretz Yisrael, the Shteitzach is the biggest population of Yidden, and the math doesn't add up. If already in America you need 1,000 before you even get to the mezuzahs, and then you add in everywhere else in the world, obviously you can't have, everyone is going to be fit into that 20%. We don't have enough sofrim. So the question we're going to deal with today, Be'ezrat Hashem, is, I'm going to try and explain what goes into the writing of the mezuzah from the moment that an avreich decides he wants to become a sofer, what is involved in becoming a sofer, all the way till the finished product, your mezuzah, what would have gone into that, and hopefully through that, along the way, we'll be able to see various questions that a person could ask if he's going to buy. What should he be asking? What could he? What input can we put in ourselves? So as we said, you've got an avreich, he decides, needs extra parnassos, he decides, you know what, I'm going to become a sofer. What's the first thing he has to do? Obviously, he has to go somewhere to learn how to write. Again, there's some short crash courses, but assuming he does it properly, he invests the money to learn properly how to write. At the same time, he has to learn the halachos in Siman Lamed Beis, right, of Ora Chaim, the first 36 Sifim. After that, it deals more with Hilchos Batim. So as a sofer, this is just a point, by the way, to realize, a sofer, the Derech Kalal doesn't know very much about batim. So if you're going to buy tefillin, don't just you want the sefer. If you're getting a sefer to write parashas, don't just assume that he knows everything about batim. He doesn't. And this is what I've heard from sofrim. They say that people come to them, they think they know about batim, they feel a certain You know, they're nervous about it. Are people just trusting them blindly? They're asking them to go get batim. Make your own inquiries. If you want to make sure that you're getting batim, top quality batim, you're entitled to make your own inquiries. A sofer may or may not be knowledgeable in batim. That's not his field of expertise. It doesn't have to be his field of expertise. So you've got the sofer, you have to learn the first 36, even very, very intricate and difficult halachos. Then he's got to learn Siman Lamed Vav, which for our purposes means basically the Torah Soisios. Then there's certain parts of the Keses HaSofer written by Rav Shlomo Gansfried that he has to learn, mainly to do with Kedushas HaShem. Some places will require a little bit more, some a little bit less. And then he goes and takes a test. Now the test, the main two bodies in Eretz Yisrael giving out the certification is going to be either the Bedatz or Mishmeres HaSdam. For the Sfaradim there's Yad Rafael as well, but again some Sfaradim will go to Bedatz or Mishmeres HaSdam as well. But the main two bodies for Ashkenazim is going to be either the Bedatz or Mishmeres HaSdam. He goes along, he takes the test, he shows a sample of his kasav, and assuming the Boichin's happy with everything, he'll give him a certificate. And it says on the certificate this is valid for anything up to 3 years. So now, let's pause there. If I'm going to go and buy something, so I want to know, I go along. If you're going to the sofer, by the way, like Dain Gedi said, Sochrim, I mean, that's the term we're going to use. I'm not talking about the Sochrim, I'm talking about the Sochrim themselves. They are businessmen. And like any other line of business, they come, you get all sorts. You get, hopefully, a very small minority, but we've all heard the shocking stories about those out there who are crooks. But Baruch Hashem, the majority definitely do not fit into that. The majority of them, however, may well be the Elecha people, they're honest, they're trying to earn a parnasa, they are businessmen after all, but don't assume they know everything about Stam. The majority of them may well not know, I'll say the second thing about Stam, they probably know more than the average person, and therefore people go and ask them questions, then they can't really advise you, they do their best, but don't just go blindly to a Sochrim. There are some Sochrim who are really tip-top, really amazing, amazing Sochrim. I know of a Sochrim in Eretz Yisrael. He may be a Sochrim, maybe a businessman, but Amaisi is one of the best Magim in Eretz Yisrael. One of the very, very top Magim. So obviously there are all different types of Sochrim. Don't just walk into it blindly and assume if he's a seicher, he knows what he's doing, it doesn't necessarily follow. So if you can go to somebody you know, or you go to a seicher direct, you can obviously get the information. It's going to be much easier to get the information you're looking for. The first most basic question you're going to ask the seicher is, do you have a te'udah? Now if he says to you, no, that could be one of maybe three possible reasons. One possibility, which is getting more and more unlikely as time marches on, and that is because he's a very, very old sofer who dates back to before Mishmeres HaSdam came on the scenes and Rav Bosna got involved, and they enacted the takana that any and every sofer has to get a te'udah before he starts writing. It could be, in which case he wasn't really, they didn't enforce it on the people who had already been writing beforehand. It could be. Highly unlikely, though. The next possibility is, he knows his halacha, he knows his stuff, but he just feels, why? Look, I know my stuff. People want to buy from me. That's their choice. Again, it's a possibility. The only thing is, obviously he's being perish min hatzibur, because there's a reason why the takana is there, because there's many other people who will say, well, if he doesn't need to get a tu'udah, I also don't. He knows his stuff, that guy doesn't. But the most likely possibility is because he actually, sadly, does not know anything in terms, or very much in terms of halacha. I'll tell you a story, a true story. Reb Reuven Mendelovitz, who's a big magia in Ramat Bet Shemesh, wrote the book Inside Stam, I think it's called. I don't think this is in his book, but he said that he got to know a certain big, very chosh of a sofer who'd been writing many Sifrei Torah, and as the more he got to know him, the more he realized that really the sofer did not know anything in terms of halacha. And it came to a certain point. At this point, the sofer had just finished writing a Sefer Torah for one of the most choshuva shuls in none less than Bnei Barak. And he turned to him and he said, do you have a te'udah? Do you have a certificate? So he said, no. So he said, why not? So he said, because the tests are way too hard. That's what he said. Right? He said, I tried a couple of times, I couldn't do it, so I wrote without a te'udah. He's an honest person, right? At least in terms of Erechkeit, he's honest. But how many people are aware of that? He doesn't know the halacha. These are basic. I just heard last night the head of Yad Rafael, Rav Shlomo Mulam. He was small. He's got small little shiurim. He said that they got a fax in, right? They got a fax in with a question from a sofer. The sofer asked, he'd given in, I don't know, parashiyos or mezuzah, whatever it was, to the makiyat to check, and there was a shayla on a chaf the Echaf and Ein Zechaf, it was too short. The Gad was too short. So the Magia sent it back to the slave. And he said, it's a Sheiras Tinnik. You have to ask a child. But he said, what I think you should do is, first correct it. In other words, make the Gad a bit longer, then go ask the child. That's the way you should do it. So the Sefer was a little bit, well, what's the point in that? So he went and asked, he sent in this fax to them, is the Magia correct? So Rav Shlomo, he says the Sefer's a boor and the Magia's a boor, right? They're both ignoramuses. The Sefer has to even ask that. You've got a Magia there. I mean, obviously, Sheilas Tinnim means you've got to ask the child as it is. What he's doing is, as Dayan Gedi mentioned, that's Shedo Kasidron. Once you fix it up, if it was possible beforehand, chances are no one's ever going to realize. You've just hustled on a Zuzah and no one's, you know. He says it's frightening. You've got there a Sefer, you've got a Magia, and they're practicing. They don't know the first things. These are basic halachas. Again, not all Sefer are like that. But if you ask, does he have a Tu'udah? If he doesn't have a Tu'udah, you don't know what he knows. Now, even if he says he does have a Tu'udah, what does that show? So like we said, the Tu'udah there's a reason why they tell them to renew it every 3 years. Again, I'll tell you a true Maisa with Ramot Chai Freeland, as a Kesadik Levrocha. Nifta a few years ago, he was in Yerushalayim, definitely the biggest Poseik in Stam, Talmud Mubuk of Rabbi Yashiv. And he was very much involved in testing the candidates. And he had somebody who came to renew his license. And he looks down, he sees the last time the person came was 5 years ago. He was a little bit perturbed about that, but he actually looked at the person, he recognized the person. This person stood out because he remembered the last time he came, which was the first time he came, the person was incredibly clear. It wasn't just he'd done the Mishnah Berurah, he'd done the Sugyas, he had the clarity, was amazing, absolutely amazing. So he didn't say anything, he just started asking him questions. And he said he couldn't believe it, this is the same person. Basic questions, the person didn't know. So he asked him what happened. And I remember 5 years ago, so the person says, I'll be honest with you, I don't have the time to do Chazora. If you don't do Chazora, even the most basic halachas, the person forgets. So even if a person did take a test once upon a time, if it was 20 years ago, that doesn't mean, that's not going to tell you anything about him now. And I'll tell you something even more. Even if a person does renew his license every 3 years, that's obviously for us is, there's not much more we can ensure. But the Maisa, it doesn't guarantee anything. Because very often what they have to do is, Rav Moshe Shaul Klein is a Talmud Mubuk of Rav Osner. When he was in America for the Shloshim of Rav Osner, so a sofer came over to him and he was bemoaning the whole situation. It's terrible. So Rav Moshe Shaul said to him, he said, well, what do you want? Most sofers don't contemplate becoming a sofer until they're so desperate to put food on the table. It's a miracle they have the time to learn the halacha and take the test. In other words, they cram for it, they pass the test, but then for the next 3 years, they forget it very quickly. So if every time they're taking the test, each time they realize, okay, I've got to renew my license quickly, let's learn the halacha, they cram it in again. Eventually, obviously, certain things are going to stick. For sure, certain things are going to stick. But there's going to be a lot that a person is going to forget. So in an ideal world, and there are, they're trying to build up this system in Eretz Yisrael. There is an organization where they have a system very much like Sheikhtim, where they go through all these halachas, Siman Lamed Beis, Siman Lamed Vav, and the whole of Kesef, so that happens 3 times a year. There's a cycle. And they have tests, they get paid a small stipend to try and encourage it. If you can find a sefer like that, that's obviously somebody who's really digging in the sugyas, that's going to be the absolute ideal. So fine, we've now got a sefer, hopefully the sefer, he knows his stuff, he's got a tu'udah, so now he's going to be ready to write the mezuzah. He asks you, what size do you want? What size mezuzah do you want? So the most typical size for mezuzahs are going to be either 15 centimeters, 1.5 that is, or 12 centimeters. Those are the most typical sizes. If you're given that choice by the same sofer, b'derech klal, there's no reason to go with the 12, go with the 15. B'derech klal, the bigger, obviously I'm talking about the same sofer. You can get two different soferim, one's written 15, one's written 12. It could be the 12 is better than the 15. But the same sofer, he's got more room to work with. There's more ink there, it gives it more longevity. If he's charging the same price, which there's no reason why he shouldn't be, if you're asking him to write for you, go with the 15 centimeter. I'll tell you, I know a sofer in Eretz Yisrael, somebody here asked him to write a few mezuzahs for him. So he asked him, what size do you want? 15, 12? So he said 12 centimeters. He said, why? I mean, I'll write 15 for you, same price. He said, because, I'll tell you why, because my old mezuzahs, the mezuzah cases, they're 12 centimeters. So the sofer said to me, he said, you know what, fine, I'll write you 15, and you know what, I'll give you free of charge, I'll give you new mezuzah cases. Right? It's an Irish car. You've got these plastic mezuzah cases. They cost a couple of pounds. Right? So replace the mezuzah cases. 15 centimeters. But derech klal is going to be better. Anything smaller than 12, you're already, like Diane Getty said, to start saying that everything is possible, these tiny mezuzahs, they're all possible, I think is a little bit unfair and harsh. But to say that they are all, I'm talking about the ones, the normal sort of £50 or less, that are going to be nothing better than bidyevet and definitely not mehuda, that is probably true. Okay, it's if bederach, there's very very little justification or reason to be getting a small mezuzah. I can think of one particular case. If a person's got an archway, sometimes you've got to ask a shayla. It's a very difficult. It's a machlokes. How exactly where to measure the tchilas shadish or elyon? You know, where, so in these sort of cases, sometimes you can end up with a situation where the Rav will tell you, you know what, if you want to be yotzi all shitters, you've got just like a 5-6 centimeter margin on the straight part before it starts arching. You want to try and get the mezuzah in there. Well, how can I get a 15 centimeter into that? So then you'll have to, if you want to really be mahada, you'll have to get a smaller mezuzah. But if you're in that situation, go order custom-made mezuzah. You'll have to pay more for it. And they're also, if you're in, it'll cost quite a bit. But you can get beautifully written small mezuzahs. But the ones which are just sold on the market, bederach klal, they're not going to be better than kosher bidyevet. It's very difficult to write small and at a decent pace and for it to come out mahada. You want to go any bigger than 15? You can. There's 20 centimeters is another. A lot of people now are looking for 20 centimeters. I'm not saying you have to, but it's you pay as you go up. Anything more than 20 is definitely going to be, you have to custom order. So now the sofa, then just a word or two about cloth. Like we said, so that you've picked your size, whatever it is, 15, 12 centimeters, whatever it is. The sofa probably won't ask you this, but like Diane Getty said, the cloth has to have ibud lishmo. Now, Lemaisa, I just think it's a particularly interesting halacha from the Bach, a psychology, the way the Bach looks at it. What happens if a person can't get klaf which has had ibud lishmo? What if you can't get hold of it? So the Mechaber Paskins, in that case, you rely on the Rambam. The Rambam holds that Sefer Torah and Tefillin need to have ibud lishmo, but mezuzah does not. So the Mechaber says, if you really can't get hold of ibud lishmo, so do it ibud shelo lishmo. And obviously at the first opportunity, you'll switch the mezuzah. You put it up without a bracha for the time being. First opportunity, you have to switch it. Says the Bach, I disagree. Because I feel there's very little to gain here and a lot to lose. Because what's going to happen? The person's going to put up the mezuzah. Yeah. Obviously with the first opportunity, I'm going to replace it. But it's been up there for a month. The person begins to, it's already a month, 2 months. Okay, you know what? Next time I get them checked, I'll replace it then. You tell a person, you're not going to have any mezuzah on your door until we get ibud lishmo available. You can be sure this person, people get very nervous. They don't have mezuzah there. Shmira, it's dangerous. They're going to be phoning every day the klaf machan, is it ready? Is it ready? Says the Bach, better short-term loss, long-term gain. So you won't get the Rambam. We don't really pass like the Rambam anyway. I'm not saying we go like the Bach. The Shach disagrees. But it's just an interesting lesson in human psychology there, the way the Bach appreciates it. So coming back to, we need ibud lishmo. Again, just to be aware, I'm not saying you need to have ibud lishmo avodas yad, but just to be aware, like in so many other things, when it comes to shmura matzah, when it comes to tzitzis, you can get avodas yad, and you can get that which is done by machine. Don't just assume that the klaf is going to be avodas yad. Again, I'm not saying you have to get avodas yad. For sure, in mezuzah, there's even more room to argue that bichlal, we've got the Rambam to rely on anyway. And if the Sefer turns around and says, you know what, I can write much better on klaf, which is not avodas yad, right? Rav Menachem Davidovitz, he was the Avi HaSofrim in Eretz Yisrael, was Nifter a few years ago. He wrote many, many years ago about this. We talked about, there was coming on the scenes avodas yad, but he said the Maisa, the klaf, which was done by machine, was much better quality, and the writing came out much better. And he says, in that situation, as long as it's done properly by machine with hashgacha, although in those days there wasn't so much hashgach as it happens, but Amaisa, as long as you know it's done, you know, bekashrus, the writing comes first. But Baruch Hashem today, that's not much of an issue. You can get avodas yad, which is just as good quality, sometimes even better than machine klaf. And again, ask your own Rav, you know, do I have to go with avodas yad? But just to be aware, if you're buying cheap mezuzahs, avodas yad is going to be more expensive. It's highly unlikely it is avodas yad. So if you want to be makpid on that, you're more likely to get that, or it's highly likely you will get it if you're buying the slightly more expensive mezuzahs. So now you've got your size, you've got the cloth. Now the sofer sits down to write the mezuzah. How long is it going to take him to write the mezuzah? So we're talking about if it's well written, realistically, it's a minimum of 3 hours. If it's a really well written mezuzah where he's every single ois, he's being makrid on every single tag, he's making sure all the chiburim are all thick, it can well take 4-5 hours, some even longer. Obviously, some sofrim can write quicker, some sofrim a little bit slower. But the maisa, you'll see the difference is going to be in the end result. When you look at the end result, here's another tip. Again, it's a little bit dangerous to say to give this tip, but nonetheless, it's kedai just to mention it. Even if you are not trained in Safras at all, take a look, if you can, take a look at the ksav. See if you can even read it. If you can't even read it, as they point out, if you can't read it, chances are this is not what you want to be looking for. But see, does it have tagim? Does it have shatnez gates, right, on the shin, the eye, and the test, etc., the three tagim on the top? If it doesn't, it may not be possible, but do you want to be buying something which is b'dieved to start with? I'll tell you, Rav Heinemann, the abbeisdin of Star Cape, besides many other things, he's a mumche in Stam. And he relates a maisa with Rav Moshe Feinstein. They brought him a mezuzah, or whatever, a mezuzah fit him, whatever it was. He looks at it, he sees it doesn't have shatnez gates. It didn't have the targum on top of these letters. So Rav Moshe said it's possible. So they couldn't understand. I mean, Mr. Burr, no. I mean, the Bach is machmir, but the maisa, we don't. But the Eber, the least is kosher. Why is he being so machmir? So they went back to Rav Moshe, and they asked Rav Moshe, does Rav Moshe hold that it's possible? Even with the Eved, if it doesn't have shatnez gates. So Rav Moshe got very upset. And he basically said to him, you don't think I know the halacha? I know what I'm talking about. But if it doesn't have shatnez gates, if the sofer couldn't take the time, the hakpodah, to put on shatnez gates, well then what else is he missing? Today, you go back, tuck in, all the ksav, sometimes they weren't so makbid. But today it's a given, a sofer who's writing the chatzchila without shatnez gates, why not? You have to ask yourself, why not? A very similar maisa with the Menachem Davidovitz, they showed him a shayla. He looked at it, he says, possible. They couldn't understand. It wasn't a shayla of possible or kosher. It was a shayla of, is it kosher b'dieved? Does it need tikkun? So they asked him, could you look at it again? He looks at it. He says, I told you already, it's possible. So they asked him, but possible, kosher, how could it be possible? He said, I don't mean the mezuzah is possible. I mean the sofer is possible. Meaning to say, yes, the individual shayla we could be makshe, but looking at the way he's writing, this is not a sofer you want to be buying from. He shouldn't be writing. He needs to first learn a little bit more, learn how to write better. Maybe the halacha needs to be better. Then he can start writing. This is not a sofer you want to be writing. You want to be buying from. So again, it doesn't harm. Take a look at the ksav. As I said, it can be a little bit dangerous because sometimes you can get true yirei shamayim. They just don't have a particularly artistic hand. So when you look at it, you think that doesn't look very good. It could be halachically perfectly sound. The briskas, for example. Like it shouldn't be dafka by briskers, but they are very much into this thing. They want to know who's writing it much more. They don't care so much about the artistic side of it. That's a bonus, if you want. So, a person has to be a little bit careful with that. You can't just sort of throw out any sofer. It doesn't seem to have an artistic hand. But if it's missing shatnez gates already, that is a little bit worrisome. So fine, now it's been written. Hopefully been written bediktuk. Now where does it go? So now it goes to be checked. Now the first thing it's checked by is it'll be have a computer check. Now I want to just dispel a couple of myths. I've had, trying to advise a Bala boss here, and when he was trying to purchase something, and he said to me openly, because I was trying to explain to him why it needs to have a human magia, and he said to me, he says, look, whatever you want, fine, I'll pay for it. But I think it's a waste of money. If it's had a computer check, why does it have to have a human check? That's one we'll come to in a second. Well, in fact, already now, a computer, the job of a computer, or at least the way we use a computer, is to check for chaseiros v'yaseiros. To check that no letters are missing, no words are missing, no word has been written twice. That's the job of a computer. When it comes to the surah sa'osiyos, yes, the computer will spew out tens, hundreds of things where it thinks it's not, there's osiyos touching, but that's not the job of the computer. That has to be checked by a human magia. That's the point of it. Now, let's just begin. How foolproof is a computer check? And the answer to that is, it is not guaranteed to be foolproof. This is more likely to be an issue with Sifrei Torah. I'll show you one example in a second. This is what we're about to see is a Sefer Torah, a new Sefer Torah donated to a shul. They started learning from it. They started finding mistakes. One presumes it was checked by computer the first time round. They decided to get it computer checked again. And lo and behold, Hopefully you can see it over there. You've got the word yishpotu. Or yishputu heim, I think it actually is. Right? It's missing a yud. Next one. That's supposed to say ervo. It's written ervas. Next one, you've got the word shenem. Shenem osar. He's written the word shenem twice. And here's another one. There you go. The words for errors, eats or errors. Now that one is, I left that to last because that's, the question is, was it the computer check who was at fault? I mean, possibly yes, but also the Magi, I should have noticed that, because that is a Zion, but it's been written too long, it's turned into a Nun. So now read to Orin. Okay? So how can that happen? If it was computer checked, how can that happen? There are other explanations, but I'm going to, since we're speaking with mezuzahs, the most likely reason why something got through a computer check is because you've got to understand, the guy who's sitting there by the computer, as we said, each column, it's making lots and lots of suggestions. And he's sitting there, ignore, he's clicking every time, ignore, whatever it's. And finally, it comes to one which is a genuine problem. He's distracted for one moment and by mistake clicks the wrong button, accept or ignore, clicks the wrong button, and you end up with it slipping through. Obviously, some people are sort of space out a little bit easier than others. When it comes to Sifrei Torah, that's why it's become more or less a standard today that you get the computer check, it's checked twice. It goes through two computer checks, but they're a kalal, it should do at least, because then the probability of the same mistake being missed twice is very, very small. With a mezuzah and tefillin, however, that's definitely not the standard procedure to get it checked twice. If you ask for it, I'm sure they'll do it. It doesn't cost much for a computer check as it happens. But with a mezuzah and tefillin, it's not as likely that if it's done by a reputable person, that it will be missed. When it comes onto the physical magia, right, the human magia, I should say. So now, again, as Dain Gedi mentioned, a magia is not a sefer. Or should I say, a sefer is not a magia. He's got a completely different exam. He's got to learn the sefer Mikdash Ma'at on Surah Sa'osius. It's a completely different area of expertise. To realize, not every, call it, level of Haggah is going to be the same. I'll tell you a maisa which happens here in Northwest London. I was teaching, a few years ago, I was teaching a boy for his bar mitzvah. And a few weeks before his bar mitzvah, so we went to the shul to do a practice run. We went through a sefer Torah, you'll see the sefer Torah in a second. A very nice kasab, not fantastic, but a nice kasab. And he finished, the boy had finished, he just went out for a moment. So I was just looking at the kasab. And suddenly I noticed, look, hopefully you can see it on there. Can you see the word, the Moshe Yomam? And you'll see it throughout the kasab. All these lines, it's not black. Now, obviously, on the pictures, because it's been done with a flash, it brings out the contrast much stronger. But I'm talking about under normal light, it's not black. What's happened is called the spitz of the kulmus. The ink isn't flowing properly. So look, I mean, just a few. These are, it's all over the sefer Torah. I don't know if you're going to be able to. You may have to zoom in a little bit, but you can see on the word mi'avdenu. Again, I'm not saying all of these things make it possible, right? But the problem is, if you're finding that on the thinner lines, that the ink is not flowing properly, you can end up with breaks in osius. Here you've got another one, you can see on the word nega there. So, okay, that was already a little bit surprising because we're finding it all over the place. But then the miser, then I started rolling it, and I almost, I couldn't believe what I suddenly saw. I don't have a picture of this, sadly not, but there was an aleph there, an aleph or a yud, where literally there was the whole sort of, an aleph, you got a yud, which connects to the horizontal, to the vav. And the leg of the yod was completely and utterly gone. Meaning to say, you just had the leg, completely and utterly disconnected. We're not talking about a small break. The leg wasn't there. We found the yod, just a head, just a roish, the leg wasn't there. What was going on? The mice of those were fixed up, so I don't have pictures of them. But look, I'll show you other examples. These don't pass it, but look at the yod on Vayit and Loi. You can see the back of it has been scraped away. And here's the next one. The word yiga, you can see that the Shatner's gates doesn't pass at it, but they've scraped away, they obviously wanted to fix it up, and what was becoming apparent is that they'd done lots of mechikas, and instead of doing a mechika and fixing it at the same time, they'd done the mechikas and they'd forgotten to come back and fix it up. Now obviously, we were just doing a little bit of random check. It could be throughout the Sefer Torah you could have issues like this, and therefore the Sefer Torah could be absolutely possible. The Sefer Torah had been in circulation for a good few years. So Reb Chaim Lopian was involved in this. We decided, it needed to go back to Eretz Yisrael for a proper check from beginning to end. went back to Eretz Yisrael. The sofer, obviously, he was rather short. He was an elcha sofer. There was a bit of a blame game going on there, who was actually at fault here. But the sofer said he wants to go through it from beginning to end. So he went through it. And he said, then I'll hand it on to Magia. So I said to the balabos here, do not let him hand it on to Magia, because it was clear the Magia hadn't done his job. That was the real problem here. We want to know who he's going to give it to before he hands it to the Magia. Fine. He came back to us a couple of months later. He says he's almost ready to give it to the Magia. This is who he's going to give it to. The name didn't mean anything to me. I asked somebody in Eretz Yisrael, also didn't know who the person was. He said, we'll find out. He went to somebody, one of the big motzim in Stam there, and he said, yeah, he knows who the person is. He says the person's got a very good eye, but he misses more than he sees. And the reason for that is, because do you know how long it takes him to do an entire Sefer Torah? An entire Sefer Torah from beginning to end to do our goal on the Sefer Torah? I've heard two different versions. 4 days or 2.5 days? That means he's checking, even if you say 4 days, he's checking over 65 columns a day. Right? That, now, even if he's working all day, which for the eyes, you ask, again, you can ask the Magia himself, but, you know, it's tiring on the eyes to be able to just to continue like that. It's no surprise he's not seeing anything there. He's just looking out, hopefully, to find the big pasulim. But anything like that, where the lines are not black, there's not a chance he's going to spot all of these. So just to realize there are, call it different levels of Agor. One person said to me recently, he said he doesn't like calling it different levels of Agor. Either you've had Agor or you haven't. If he hasn't done his job properly, he hasn't had Agor. The Maaseh, just to realize there are different standards of Agor, let's put it that way. There are some who will check, hopefully that everything is kosher. Others will do more than that, and you can only really expect this, demand this of Magiim if you're buying higher quality to start with. Then they will ensure that it's not just higher quality, it's really, they'll thicken up lines to give it longevity, etc. So that's really the process from beginning to end. Obviously there's certain questions you can ask, some of them are not so easy, you can't really, you know, go and ask, do you do Chazorah every day? You can't ask these questions. But you can try and find out as much as you can about the Sefer, his level of qualification, etc., etc. Let me just conclude with the following. So we've seen what goes in, got a little bit of an idea what goes into writing a mezuzah. To realize, therefore, a mezuzah, if you want to know realistically today what it's going to cost for a kosher and mehudadik mezuzah, right, as Dan Gedi said, we're talking about the Haimisha market now. Obviously, for outside of that, they do have to get things which are slightly lesser quality, but are kosher. But for the Haimashah market, where you want to have something which is kosher and mehudah, realistically, I'm talking about in Eretz Yisrael itself, everything has gone up in price recently, just like petrol, and you know, everything is going up in price, so too stam has gone up in price. Realistically, in Eretz Yisrael, it's 300 to 350 shekel. That's baseline mehudah. Obviously, and it goes up from there. There's some, I know of a sofa, the one I mentioned before, that really, he's got 1,600 shekel mezuzahs there, right? Obviously, they'll have an unbelievable edurim, but it starts, that's what you're looking at. So when it comes over to England, especially if it's gone through a seicher, you've got to realize the seicher is entitled, he does the work, there's a lot of work he does that you don't have to do, therefore. He's entitled to make his profit, and therefore, I'm talking about a reliable seicher, okay, right, who's really done his work. So therefore, he will add on maybe 30%, so realistically, you've got to be prepared to pay. I'm not saying that maybe you will find it a little bit cheaper, but it could be £100, it could be a little bit more, a little bit less. But think of it this way. A mezuzah, when it comes to Arba Minim, how much do you spend on Arba Minim? A lot of people are prepared to spend, you know, incredible amounts, but even if you turn around and you say, you know what, I only spend £25 on principle. I think they're taking us for a ride, they're taking advantage, let's say £25. How many mitzvahs do you get for your £25? You take the Arba Minim 6 times over the course of Sukkos. Okay, it could be your wife, children also use it. We were talking about 6 mitzvahs, of which 5 are going to be Darabonon. Only day 1 is Deiraisa. So that's what you're spending for your £25. Some people spend £100 plus. When it comes to a mezuzah, think of it like this. Every single second, you could break it down even more, maybe every millisecond, but every second is a mitzvah. It could be a mitzvah Deiraisa. If you own your house, you're not renting, many of the doors are going to be mitzvahs Deiraisa. Every second is a mitzvah. Do the calculation. I did this calculation the other day, and to be honest, it's quite eye-opening. Do it. 60 seconds in a minute. 60 minutes in an hour. 24 hours in a day. You know, 7 days in a week. 52 weeks in a year. A good mezuzah can last 40 to 50 years. If you do the calculation, divided by £100, for every penny, you're getting kimat 1 million mitzvahs. I'm not exaggerating. About 1 million mitzvahs. Even if it lasts 20 years, 500,000 also is not bad. It's a good investment. Okay? Remember at the same time, this is not just an investment about a mitzvah, as the Rambam says, it's the ultimate mitzvah, it's giving edus on the yichud of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, And through that, yes, we merit tremendous Shemira. As the Rambam says, somebody who buys it just because they want the Shemira, in the Chedek Loilam Abo. That's not the way it works. We do it because that's the mitzvah. But as the Kesser Mishnah says, the Zuchus HaMitzvah is what gives the protection. Let me just conclude. I know I'm pretty much over time, but let me just conclude with the following. I just want to tell you one Maaseh. There's all these Maaseh, but to me this was the Maaseh which, to me, sort of is the most shocking Maaseh. You'll find it in the book Inside Stump. Again, you can verify the details with Rabbi Uwe Mendelovitz himself. In, can give you his details if you want, in Ramat Beit Shemesh. He was given mezuzahs to be checked by somebody living in Ramat Beit Shemesh. The person said, "Can you check my mezuzahs?" He said to him, "Yeah, fine, anything particularly you want me to look out for?" He said, "Yeah, just look at the words, Levovecho and Levavchem." Obviously, there was something to do with the cardiology in the family there, fine. So he starts looking through it. The first mezuzah, absolutely fine. Second mezuzah, absolutely fine. Right, beautiful mezuzahs. And then he came to a certain mezuzah, and Taka, the person must have realized there was something here. The word Levovecho was written, Lev Becho. In other words, there was a gap between the two bases. Continues on, Levavchem, same thing. What's going on over here? He goes back to the father. He says they're all perfectly fine, except there's one mezuzah where it was taka written like that. The father almost, he almost fainted. He said, "Let me tell you something. Our two-year-old son, we took him for a routine checkup to the pediatrician the other day. Just supposed to be a routine checkup. And he was checking him over. He was listening to his heart, and he didn't like what he was hearing. So he sent us off to a cardiologist. The cardiologist is listening, and he's getting more and more frustrated. He says, "I don't understand. What I'm hearing over here is that the two chambers of the heart, they're distant from one another." Right? A person doesn't develop this. A person is either born with this condition or not. How could the pediatrician have not picked up on this when the baby was born? 2 years it takes for them to pick it up. So they went back to the pediatrician. He says, "I'm also stumped. I'm telling you, I checked the baby over. He was not born with this condition. It's unheard of." What had happened was this baby had only been moved into that bedroom just that week. For the first 2 years of his life, he'd been with the parents, whatever it was. That week, they'd moved the baby into that room. Think about it. Levovecho is not just about the heart. The two bases. A bias is a chamber. The two batim were distant from one another. So Rabbi Uwe Mendelovitz said to him, "Do you want me to fix it up? I mean, there's no problem. Should I sit on if it's done properly?" So he said, "No, you can fix it up. Give it to Gemach. I'll buy a new mezuzah." He was too spooked out. To realize that this mitzvah is a gewaldiger mitzvah, it gives shmirah to the bias, to the person outside the bias. It's a beautiful mitzvah. It's an investment of a lifetime. And anyone who's mekayem this mitzvah, we have a havtacha from none less than the Maharam Mirotenberg. He says, "Muftachani, I promise." We've got a promise from him. Anyone who puts mezuzahs on all his doors, he says, "I promise, no mazik will be able to be shedit on that person." But obviously, he means kosher, and he's kosher, and about mehuda, but kosher mezuzahs. Be'ezus Hashem, mezuchus of this mitzvah, going through obviously times when we all need this Shmira Adyeno, Klal Yisrael should have the Shmira Adyeno from this mitzvah, and with the Zchus HaMitzvah that this Shmira gives us.
Mind-boggling.